This is The Most Beautiful Man in Atlantis, a Starkid Atlantis fanfic written by Smile Backwards and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated G and contains the pairing Rodney McKay, John Shepherd, with additional tags for Alternate Universe, Canon Divergence, Alternate Universe, Different First Meeting, Humor, Pining, based on a Tumblr post, and was written for Romancing McShep 2019. Author's notes. This is based on a hilarious Tumblr post called "The Most Beautiful Man in the World Who Lives in My Building and Only Ever Sees Me When I Look Disgusting." There's a link to this Tumblr post in the podfic metadata. Rodney runs into Major Shepherd in the transporter on the south side of the West Pier. Shepherd stops the door from closing on Rodney's jacket, tied loose around Rodney's waist because he'd gotten overheated, wedged inside the guts of the control chair, and says something that Rodney misses, busy staring at the perfect cut of Shepherd's cheekbones and the dark sweep of his eyelashes. Rodney, who is going to win at least 3 Nobels when the Stargate program is declassified, whose brain is a crown jewel of Atlantis, says, "What?" Shepherd looks at him, mouth curved in faint, almost fawn-looking amusement. "I said, are you okay?" Rodney looks down at where he's covered in black grease. The ancients were capable of advanced space travel, but apparently had never mastered basic gear lubrication. Also, he spilled coffee on his pants leg at some point. And there's a drying trail of blood on his right palm from where he cut it on the edge of one of the metal panels inside the chair. Rodney would be slightly less mortified if this had been the first inauspicious encounter he's had with Shepherd. It's not. This is, in fact, the third time Rodney has met Shepherd, and unfortunately, also the third time he's looked like a crazed mechanic, while Shepherd looks like he stepped off the pages of military GQ. Shepherd showed up with the fourth wave of new military and support staff for Atlantis, the lone Air Force officer in a sea of Oorah Marines. And he has been in the physics lab when Rodney had just dragged himself, dripping wet, out of the newly unclogged desalination pumps so he could yell at his minions before going in search of a dry shirt. Shepherd had been sitting on Rodney's usual lab stool. "Who's this?" Rodney said, irritated. And then the ancient device in Shepherd's hand lit up, and Rodney had really looked at him with his soft, sharp hazel eyes and spiky non-regulation hair, and it had all been over but the crying. Simpson nudged Rodney in the ribs with her elbow after Shepherd left. "Is this your first time meeting Major Hottie?" "Major what?" Rodney screeched. "That could not be his name." Simpson grinned. "Major Shepherd. He's new." Rodney scowled at her and willed his heart rate to return to normal levels. 2 days later, in the mess hall, he'd been eating Pegasus not chicken with what the military tried to pass off as barbecue sauce and spilled half his plate down his front. "Anyone sitting here?" Shepherd asked from over Rodney's shoulder. Because that would be the one precise moment of Rodney's life when someone wanted to sit with him in a cafeteria. Which brings him back to meeting 3. Here, in the transporter, with Rodney covered in grease, coffee, and dried blood. Rodney doesn't consider himself an unattractive individual. He can go a little mad scientist sometimes when Atlantis is in danger, and there are very specific get-the-shield-working-in-12-hours-or-we'll-all-die deadlines. But in general, he is a functioning adult human being with 2 PhDs, who takes showers and owns clothing that doesn't look like it's been dunked in coffee and run over by a truck. Why he can't manage to convey this impression when Shepard's around is baffling. I'm fine, Rodney sniffs, taking refuge in asperity.
What are you doing out here?
Shepard shrugs, a distinctly non-military movement.
Felt like the place to be.
Shepard seems oddly pulled by ancient technology.
Aside from drifting to the physics lab and now towards the control chair,
Zelenka's regaled Rodney with jubilant stories of the things Shepard can make the gate ships do. His ancient gene must be off the charts.
The transporter stops, and the doors hiss open.
Rodney, of course, was leaning against the doors, so he essentially falls out of the transporter, saved only by Shepard's sudden grip on his arm.
Thanks,
Rodney says, as Shepard pulls him fully upright. It puts their faces very close together.
There's a faint scar on Shepard's chin that Rodney hadn't noticed before.
No problem, Dr. McKay,
Shepard says. For a moment, his hand stays warm against the bare skin of Rodney's arm. Then he takes a step back, pats Rodney on the shoulder, and walks away.
The next time Rodney sees Shepard, they're gearing up for an off-world mission.
Hey, McKay,
Shepard says, like he's glad to see him.
Rodney's stomach does another of the dumb little flips it tends to do whenever he runs into Shepard.
Most of the military contingent either complains or defaults to Sumner's stone-faced stoicism thing when Rodney's occasionally attached to teams for missions.
Taylor and Lieutenant Ford appear shortly after, and the four of them walk through the wormhole and out onto PX-5788, where there's a strong lead on a ZPM,
or at least enough quality charge-holding ancient artifacts to be worth their while.
Rodney's in a freshly laundered science team uniform, and this is a tech-focused mission. This is his element. Rodney is going to damn well shine, and Shepard is going to be there to see him do it.
6 hours later, they've all been shot at by Janai, and Rodney and Shepard have been split up from Taylor and Ford. Rodney thinks Shepard's made an official arch-enemy out of General Kolya. Rodney has a half-charged ZPM clutched in his white-knuckled fingers, but no one is exactly shining.
Again, Rodney says, looking down at his ripped uniform, then up at the sky.
Really?
As far as he's concerned, this is irrefutable scientific evidence that there is no God.
Shepard sweeps him up and down with a concerned look.
What's wrong?
Rodney sighs.
Nothing. I'm just the human embodiment of disaster. I swear I can look like a normal person.
At least he has a reasonable excuse this time.
You look fine to me, Shepard says, with his half-smile.
He's a mess this time, too, Rodney realizes.
Shepard's lost his jacket and tack vest.
There's dirt shading his perfectly chiseled jawline, and a tattered strip of his t-shirt is wrapped around the bullet wound in his arm.
He's still the most beautiful man in Atlantis.
In Pegasus.
The known and infinite universe, probably, Rodney thinks.
He hopes his feelings don't show on his face.
Controlled expressions have never been his forte.
Shepard isn't looking at him anyway. He stands up from behind the ridgeline they're sheltering below, fires two quick bursts from his P-90, and ducks back down while shoddy Janai-issue bullets come back at them.
There's a hole in the right position,
he tells Rodney absently, then taps his headset.
Ford, are you and Taylor still all right?
Yes, sir,
Ford's voice says in their ears.
You want us to come get you?
We'd appreciate it,
Got any C4 on you? Grenades? I heard these folks love that stuff.
Rodney can hear the ready-to-blow-shit-up smile in Ford's voice when he says,
"Of course, sir. Never go anywhere without him."
Shepard grins, easy and amused and beautiful.
"You're a credit to the Corps, Lieutenant."
Bringing back a ZPM apparently cements Shepard, Rodney, Taylor, and Ford as a permanent gate team. Rodney wouldn't have thought Shepard would be one for pushing team cohesion outside missions, but he is not about to complain when it means he gets to spend more time with Shepard. Rodney gets popcorn stuck in his teeth on movie night, almost falls off the pier when Shepard drags him there with a cooler beer and sandwiches, and insults Johnny Cash right before learning he's Shepard's favorite musician. Shepard keeps coming back. Shepard is on Rodney's stool in the physics lab again. Rodney doesn't even make a token protest. "You are horrendously in love, and I find it both pitiful and endearing," Raddick says gleefully, sort of voce.
"Shut up," Rodney says through clenched teeth. "Shepard is right there!"
"Hmm?" Shepard hums, looking up from the ancient Rubik's Cube he has been fiddling with. "Did you say something?" He has solved 3 sides and is working on a 4th, and Rodney remembers the excruciating moment Shepard absently added a negative sign to solve an equation up on the whiteboard that half the physics lab had been fighting over for a week.
"Oh no," Rodney had thought. "He's smart."
"I have actual work for you to be doing, Major," Rodney says. He carries over the miscellaneous box where the science team tosses ancient artifacts that register as charged on the scanners but won't activate. "Here."
"Cool," Shepard says. He cups his hands around a sphere with geometric patterns etched into its metallic surface, and it slowly brightens to a soft blue-green glow.
They activate a cylinder that sloshes like it's filled with water, and a box of orange-red crystals that Rodney has high hopes for being small-scale ZPMs based on a document he found in the ancient database. This might be the most successful interaction he's ever had with Shepard, Rodney thinks, handing Shepard something that looks like a floppy disk.
"Ow, fuck!" Shepard says.
The disk drops from his hands to clatter on the lab table. Shepard shakes out his arms. Rodney can see the hair on them standing up, shocked perpendicular. A spot on Shepard's palm is burnt pink and raw.
"Shit," Rodney says, tugging fitfully at the waist of Shepard's jacket.
"Let's go see Carson." Rodney hovers over Shepard while Carson clucks and dabs antiseptic and lectures Shepard on the virtue of clean bandages and not overtaxing his hand while it heals.
"It's just a scratch, Rodney," Shepard tells him.
Rodney suddenly realizes he's been clutching Shepard's good hand.
"Yes," he says. "Well,"
and then he leans forward and kisses Shepard on the mouth. Shepard kisses him back. When he looks up at Rodney, all green eyes and sly charm, he says, wry,
"I thought you'd never ask." The end.
Reader's nuts. The most beautiful man in the world, who lives in my building, and only ever sees me when I look disgusting. A Tumblr post written by Of Geography.
The most beautiful man in the world lives in my building. I don't know his name. We met on a bus, where I smiled way too brightly at him for strangers, because, honest to God, my whole heart lit up in a way that made me think, "Oh, I must know that guy." No, I didn't. He is just the most beautiful man in the world. What does the most beautiful man in the world look like? I will tell you. Like the way the sun spills over water at dusk. Like the way food smells when you're hungry. Like the sound angels make when they're doing folk covers of pop songs on their heavenly harps.
And also, kind of like the guy who played Chad in High School Musical, if the guy who played Chad in High School Musical was the most beautiful man in the world. I tell you this not only to brag that I live in the same apartment complex as the most beautiful man in the world, but also because I want to know why, if there even is a God, every single time I run into the most beautiful man in the world, I look like a literal dumpster troll that has just crawled out of its garbage house in search of free Wi-Fi and a Slurpee. I want to know why I can never just be cool with the most beautiful man in the world when we ride the elevator together, which is kind of often. Did you guys know that sometimes I look nice? Sometimes I actually look like a functioning adult. Sometimes I would go so far as to say I am an attractive individual. Do you know who doesn't know any of that? The most beautiful man in the world who lives in my building. Here's a quick rundown of the last few times I ran into the most beautiful man in the world. I was wearing a maxi dress that I had very cleverly biked home in without a helmet. Don't try that at home, kids. In the very hot afternoon sun, so I was a gross sweat monster. But without any obvious indicator that there was a normal reason for it, and I couldn't stand to look at him. So I just glared at my phone while he probably wondered, alarmed, whether I was fleeing the scene of a crime. I was wearing a white shirt that I had, not seconds before, spilled salsa all over in a big red stain right down the front like a kindergartner. I was carrying two armfuls of enormous bags of popcorn with a Three Musketeers bar literally in my mouth, and he overheard me say through my stuffed candy cheeks to my doorman, No, I'm not having a party. This is literally all for me. I dropped my backpack while opening my mail and said to it, defeated, Why? Why did you do that when I explicitly told you not to? Do you like being on the floor? I fell into and then off of the elevator. Why? Why does this happen? What vengeful god has orchestrated it so the only times I ever run into the most beautiful man in the world are when I could easily be mistaken for a child's doll that has been put through the wash by accident, or a dollar bill that has been stained by years of being in people's sweaty palms, or a mop with eyes? Whatever. Everything costs money, and everyone you love disappoints you. Mop eyes out. Dead Cat with a Flamethrower reblogged. I have no idea what's going on in this post, but I desperately want the most beautiful man in the world of this post's fame to have secretly been in love with his neighbor Trash Monster the entire time. Jumping Jack Trash reblogged. Seriously, I want this guy to come across this post and slowly put it all together like salsa stain, popcorn bags, talking to backpack. Oh my god, this is Awkward Cutie in 3B. Oh my god, Awkward Cutie likes me. And then romance. Roach Patrol reblogged. Tug sleeve urgently. Jesse, I have a new AU now. This was originally posted on June 19th, 2016. And it lives entirely in my brain, five ever. Thank you so much to Small Backroads for having blanket permission to Podfic and for putting this Tumblr post and also this fic on my radar. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.